He was the lanky, body-bashing front man of one of Australia's biggest and most fiercely independent pub bands. That band, in fact, Midnight Oil. Midnight Oil wrote about serious topics at a time when love was in the air and the nips were getting bigger. The Oil's pulsating, tight rock anthem struck a chord with fans who didn't always share their worldview. But even for a band with a strong sense of social and environmental justice, their lead singer, Peter Garrett, was maybe at times too drawn to political activism. Perhaps it was inevitable he'd end up in the big house on Capitol Hill. But for a rock star who wore his convictions on his sleeve, it was never going to be easy. Peter Garrett's memoir is called Big Blue Sky, and he is my Wednesday wordsmith. Peter, thank you for joining me in the studio. Good morning.
Hey, Joe, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
When the press gallery got a hold of the advance copies of your memoir, two issues grabbed the headlines. One was your view of Kevin Rudd, which we'll get on to a bit later. The other was the mention of an envelope of cash from Clubs New South Wales, which was quickly corrected as a cheque. The early copies have a bit of printed paper now explaining that it was a mistake. Do you regret that was all the media wanted to talk about when this represents years of your life?
That was certainly a small thing, and corrections are not uncommon in books. I think that some journos always love the idea of the gotcha moment, and it's a part of our political culture and our media culture. But it's past, and what's been great has been getting out and speaking to people, doing the tour, and really explaining the measure of writing a memoir which encompasses nearly 40 years of public life and has got lots of bits and pieces in it which I think are interesting to people.
And in fact, you've probably had a bit of disdain over the years for journalists, and I think that even predated being a politician, didn't it?
I think, some of my best friends are journos. I guess it's a pretty obvious opening remark. But I do think we have a problem, and it's not simply because I've done time in the parliament, but more generally, where some parts of the media culture are either focused on confecting something small into something big, which doesn't have the public policy dimension that justifies the confection, or alternatively, always looking at something from the point of view of trying to find the conflict or entry point. And we don't celebrate in this country the things that we do well, but we constantly are focusing and spotlighting where mistakes are made. Now, mistakes are a part of life, political life as much as any other life, but they're not the full story. And I think that we lack, particularly in the gallery in Canberra, some sense of balance. And you saw the way in which they behaved, many of them, in the period of time when Kevin Rudd was challenging Julia Gillard. They weren't interested in what the government was doing, and the government was battling away, trying to get good things done for the country, whether it was a national disability insurance scheme, or in my case, the Gonski reforms for education, need-based funding, school funding model, which would have made a big difference to kids and will make a big difference to kids. And yet you'd never know almost that stuff was going on because there was so much concentration on the leadership style. So, look, good journos do a good job, but sometimes you do get a little bit frustrated.
Do you think that Malcolm Turnbull learned a lot from that period in this recent coup against Tony Abbott?
I think you're absolutely right, Joe. I think he did. And it's obvious that he's had some time sitting both in opposition and now in government, not in the position he now holds, to think through how he wants to approach that. And he's not letting the media run his agenda for him. And to that extent, I wouldn't support Malcolm because he's on the other side of the fence, but I certainly think that's smart.
Look, having said that, there were times when you did support him, or more correctly, he supported you, because you were introducing the emissions trading scheme, the carbon pollution reduction scheme, and for a very brief moment, there was bipartisan support. What happened?
Yes, there was, and I think I write about this in the memoir, and people might remember it, but it was incredible because you're right. We did have bipartisan support for an emissions trading scheme, which would have started the business of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And really, two political players operated there, I think, in both instances, pretty cynically. One was Kevin Rudd, who was Prime Minister at the time, and he really wanted to punish Turnbull and hold out the opportunity for Turnbull to be seen as a blocker. And the other were the Greens, Bob Brown and Christine Milne, who decided that, the perfect was the enemy of the good and opposed the scheme. And that was really an incredible historic moment for us because we'd worked so hard, Joe, up to that point in time. In opposition, I had responsibility for that policy and renewable energy as well. And it was a great policy. And if we had have got it into place, it would have started the business of reducing emissions and stimulating an economy that was based on low emissions, energy efficiency and the like. And instead, it fell in a heap. We had to start all over again. There was a loss of public faith and a sense that Labor didn't really care as much about the issue as originally had been thought. And then ultimately we did get a scheme in place. And by the way, with Greg Combey and Julia Gillard as Prime Minister, the second carbon pollution reduction scheme worked. And for me, it was a perfect circle. We actually saw emissions come down for the first time in that volume. Incredible, it worked. We recycled some money to poor people, less well off, who may have had some small energy increases in their electricity bills. And the rest of the money was going to the clean energy finance and to supporting young startups that were doing things in energy efficiency and solar and the like. So it's actually working. And then, of course, Abbott arrives, and he's the beneficiary of those actions by both Rudd and Bob Brown. And then everything gets pulled apart until Turnbull arrives. So, you know, I think of all the public servants, I think of the scientists, I think of the community groups, I think of people in this part of Australia who care so much about that issue. And it's one of those tough moments in politics when this happens.
Does that, in a sense, sum up why you didn't become a Green and why perhaps you never would have, that you always saw yourself as a Labor person when, you know, many people were surprised you didn't run for the Greens?
Yes, it does in part. I think, look, the other thing about it is that I'd spent two terms as ACF president. It was in the latter stages of the AUS career, the Australian Conservation Foundation. And we had achieved a lot in terms of protecting natural places, whether it was Kakadu, the Daintree rainforest, the temperate forests of southwestern Australia and southeastern Australia. And that had been done through effectively majority government because they had the opportunity to make those changes and make those things which were good for the environment. So on that basis, I saw what strong community action coupled with effective government commitments to the environment could actually deliver. And they were real achievements. But the other side of it is that I've got a strong sense that government can't and shouldn't be expected to do everything. And I think in Australia, sometimes we quite rightly need to hold politicians to account and our political parties to account. But there's also a point where you simply can't reconfigure your worldview around this idea that the government suddenly has to do everything and pay for everything and it will work. The appropriations, you know, the budget, if you look at it, if you're sitting in the cabinet room, the budget's a big complex beast. And it does require you to think about the money that goes to education and to health and to defence and to a range of other things. And I guess I'm too much of an economic realist, if you like, to find myself just simply saying, well, the only way we can fix this is for the government to go and spend more money.
And you have to be able to compromise in politics to get somewhere, don't you? I mean, that you just don't.
Not a dirty word. And, you know, I have absolutely no regrets in the steps that I took. And I joined a team. And I think also in terms of providing people with an opportunity, wherever they might live, to have fulfilling lives, you need to get the balance right between ensuring that your tax dollars are helping things like education, that you are protecting the environment, but also that you're providing the opportunities for innovation, imagination, creativity, the development of the new industries that ought to replace in time our dependence on fossil fuels and digging stuff up out of the ground.
How much did growing up in Lynfield in the bushy northern beaches influence you, do you think, as a child and your environmental leanings?
I think it had a huge impact on me. You know, as a kid playing in the bush, just experiencing it, enjoying it, and actually being challenged by it and challenging yourself in the bush. I think it, you know, I think it really seeped into my skin.
And as someone who loved body surfing, why did you end up in Canberra?
Yeah, you got to drive a long way for a surf there. Lake Burley Griffin doesn't really do it, does it? Look, I just wanted to get away from the North Shore. You know, I mean, I grew up in a household where my dad was sort of a liberal person and my mum was more Labor, and they encouraged political discussion. And I was interested in politics as when I was young. But at the same time, I wanted to get away from the North Shore and experience a bit more diverse kind of surroundings and people from different places. And ANU in Canberra, the uni there, offered me that chance.
When you were studying law at ANU and you came back to Sydney, law degree under your belt, you were going to be a barrister. You were going to practice criminal law. And you met a couple of, you know, young students who seemed, they were first years, and they seemed a bit young and immature to you and formed the farm. Why did that partnership work?
Well, I mean, we heard Forgotten Years before we came on. You know, Rob Hurst's a great songwriter, and he and Jim Magini had played together at school, and they were a schoolboy band. I think the partnership worked in because they had such a strong musical capacity. And ultimately, I think I had a very strong performance